This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct. I am Don LaGreca. Let's get right to it. Ton of games last night. Interesting ones as well. It's just been a crazy season as far as goals are concerned. Just seems like teams are putting up big-time numbers this year. And no better example than the Islanders and the Oilers game. 5-1, Oilers win. And James Neal, the new acquisition, puts up a four spot. This after Mantha scored four goals the other night for Detroit. This after we've seen 8 points in the first two games for Mika Zibanejad. It's made these individual efforts, the room on the ice. It's obvious this season that the offense seems to be ahead of the defense or the goaltending or however you want to put it. But these individual efforts and teams scoring a ton of goals, six goals for the Hurricanes last night over the Panthers, who've gotten off to a slow start. It's hard to really put a finger on exactly what's happening here as far as some of the teams and some of the starts. But the one thing that we've seen consistently is teams being able to put up big time offense. Power plays seem to be clicking. Teams that I think usually that have that cohesion, right, that they didn't make a lot of changes during the offseason, can really put it together offensively. But you're seeing, again, you know, James Neal's been in Edmonton for 5 minutes, and he turns around and scores four goals. I guess it's easy when you're playing with, you know, tremendously talented players like Edmonton has. But just a crazy start to the season. So the Oilers beat the Islanders 5-2. Panthers lose 6-3 at home to the Hurricanes. And with the Penguins losing to the Jets 4-1, now, you know, Penguins are banged up, so are the Jets on the blue line, but you're seeing teams that we thought would be something that are getting off to slow starts. You know, I was a big Panther fan. I thought with the acquisition of Joel Quenneville, getting a legitimate goaltender of Bobrovsky, that team's lost two of their first three games. And granted, two of their first games were against Tampa, but they won one of those games, right? You know, I thought the Stars, I've got them going to the Stanley Cup final. They've lost three of their last four. They salvaged a game in Washington last night, beating the Capitals in overtime by the final score of 4-3. They were staring a four-game losing streak in the face to start things off for their season, but they managed to get the win. They get a couple of goals in the third period, blow the lead, giving up a goal with 31 seconds remaining by Nicholas Backstrom, but they win the game in overtime as Tyler Seguin finds the back of the net. So they get their first victory of the year, but just kind of strange. The Stars, who I think a lot of people, not just me, had pegged as being a big-time team this year, and they still could be, but dropping three of their first game, four games. What's happening in San Jose is very interesting. Four straight losses. That was my ice pick last night because I thought the Sharks getting Evander Kane back and Burns back as well, and with the Predators playing their third straight home game and splitting the first two, that would be a chance for the Sharks to get right, and they were never really in the game. They gave up a goal very early to Yossi. Yossi gets his second goal. Sharks get back into it, scoring a power play late in the second period to make it 2-1, but then bang, Nashville scores a couple of quick goals in the third, and then it's game, set, match as the Predators now have won two of their first three games. So a real interesting night there. How about the Kings get their first win of the year, and where do they get it? In Calgary against the Flames and the Bruins. 3-0 to start the year. I don't think anybody's overly surprised, but they go to Vegas and beat the Golden Knights 4-3 in that one. So just a lot of crazy hockey being played here. Bruins 3-0, though I thought they were sluggish to start the season, but really have gotten hot now, and they beat Vegas, and, you know, starting out on the West Coast is never easy. Rask was helped off the ice at the end of the game, so there was a little concern there in Bruin land, but Cassidy said afterward that it was just a pulled muscle and dehydration, so nothing really to be overly concerned with there. So those are the games from last night, and you go back to Monday with the Blues beating the Maple Leafs and the Sabres finally losing to the Blue Jackets, but salvaging a point, getting a late goal. It's been a lot of fun. It really has just been a tremendous amount of fun watching this sport from an offensive standpoint. It's so early to kind of peg where everyone is. You know, EJ brought it up on Monday. You know, everybody thought the Devils were in great shape, winning their first four games of the season, didn't even make the playoffs. So the fact that the Stars and the Sharks are off to slow starts doesn't necessarily mean their seasons are over. But it's certainly something to consider and take a look at when you look at the fact that there's so much competition in this sport now, and you don't want to get off to too slow of a start. But again, we've seen many examples where fast starts and slow starts really don't mean anything in the grand scheme of things. Sharks 0-4, they've got 78 games left in their season. They will get a little bit healthier, so we can't get too crazy. Wanted to bring up the Nemestikov deal between the Rangers and the Ottawa Senators. Rangers get a young defenseman back, a fourth-round pick, but more than really anything else is trying to get some cap space. Nemestikov really never worked out here. He came over in the JT Miller deal and the McDonough deal, if you remember, a couple of years ago at the end of two seasons ago. Nemestikov was a nice player, but obviously you take him away from that culture of scoring in Tampa where he's playing with, you know, the Kucherovs and the Stamkoses of the world, that he really ended up just becoming a bottom six forward. And with McKeag not getting a chance to play, with Hedel waiting in the wings in the minor leagues, I think the Rangers just saw an opportunity to open up a space, free some cap room, get a pick, and kind of move forward. I see Ottawa as a team, and I got to see them firsthand on Saturday in their loss to the Rangers. They're a team that, you know, they've got some nice offensive players, but they just needed an NHL forward. So they have to add some cap room for them, but they need it, you know, because they're in a rebuilding mode, but you bring in a veteran who can score some goals. Maybe the change of scenery to Ottawa will help out Nemestikov, but I think it was a good move by Jeff Gordon and JD, free up some cap space. It just wasn't working here with Nemestikov, and honestly, the way the season had started, is Greg McKeag going to be really any much of a difference to Nemestikov? But if you can free up some space, get a draft pick, this is a sport where you just want to hoard as many draft picks as you can, so the fact that you're able to get a fourth-round pick is a pretty good move. So we'll keep an eye on what happens there. Let's get to your tweets. A lot of people have wanted to tweet over the last couple of days. Didn't get to as many as I wanted to when we had EJ on back on Monday. So let's get started with Donnell Weaver, who says, "Hey, Don, I know that the NHL season just started last week, but as a fan in the New York metropolitan area that watches the three local teams, the Rangers look good for two games. Are you concerned about the Islanders and the Devils?" Well, listen, I'm not necessarily not concerned about the Rangers either. I mean, the Rangers have won their first two games, but it's really been a top-heavy scoring, right? When you've scored 10 goals and 8 of the 10 Mika Zibanejad is responsible for, then that tells you they're getting a lot of production out of their top line. You'd like to get a little bit more out of the rest of the forwards. But the blue line is contributing. The goaltending, I think, has been very good. I thought Hank, even though he allowed four goals, in the Winnipeg game, he still faced 47 shots. So you make 43 saves, that's pretty good. And I thought Georgiev, although not overly tested, was pretty solid, gave up the one goal on Saturday. So I need to see a little bit more out of the Rangers before I'm saying there aren't any concerns there. Islanders and Devils, listen, I was concerned about the Islanders going in because much like the Devils the previous year, they didn't do a lot to change their roster, all right? You get Varlamov, which is fine, and I do think that's a debatable improvement to Lerner, but the fact is that when you're giving up 1.6 goals a game, that was not necessarily an area where you were expecting to improve anyway. The power play, it's a little too early to determine whether the change in coaching there is going to bear fruit. I think it's too early to get crazy. You've had a tough schedule. I think Edmonton is a pretty good team. They're going to be better than they were last year. You started the season off against Washington. We know how good they are. They're the defending champions in the division. So, and Winnipeg you took care of, and that's a game that you need to win considering where Winnipeg is now in the season with their blue line. You look at the Penguins, couldn't take care of Winnipeg. So I'm not going to get crazy about the Islanders either. You know, the Devils, you have to be worried about their goaltending. I mean, I think you've got enough forwards. I think you've got a decent blue line. But did they address the goaltending? Is Schneider, who got tweaked in that Winnipeg game, going to be the goaltender that they thought they acquired for a ninth overall pick years ago with Vancouver? Or is it going to be what it's been the last few years? Schneider ineffective or hurt, and then hoping that some of your backup goaltending, your tertiary goaltending is going to get the job done. So until we find out exactly what this goaltending is, I don't know what the Devils are, but I don't think they're a playoff team. Now, I don't think goaltending is as important as it's been in the past, but you still need decent enough goaltending, and they haven't gotten that. But this is a team that had a 4-0 lead late in the second period against Winnipeg. So you know that they have ability. It's just a matter of being able to close games out. You've got some new moving parts there. You know, you've got a first-round pick. Gusev is in there. You bring in Simmons. You bring in P.K. Subban. So there's a lot of different things that have to gel. But the goaltending just has not been there, and that has been a recurring theme for this team over the last couple of years. And it's been a bit of a problem. I'm hearing some rumblings that maybe they might be interested in a goaltender. You know, Jonathan Quick has been on the market in Los Angeles for a while. Is that the answer? Quick, I think, is an outstanding goaltender. He's won two Stanley Cups, but he's also been injury prone. Do you want to send over a package to Los Angeles to have Quick come here, play for 2 weeks, and then tear a groin or injure a knee and be on the shelf and just adding to the wealth of problems your goaltending is anyway? So of the three teams in the local area, the team that clearly I'm the most concerned about is New Jersey. Troy says, I got to watch the Bruins live last night, and after a rocky start, they looked as solid as ever. Rask may have suffered an injury at the end of the game, but do you think this team still has what it takes to roll back into the Stanley Cup Finals? Well, we addressed the Rask situation. Apparently, it's not a big deal. You're in a division with the Tampa Bay Lightning, so that's always going to be a problem. You're in the same conference as them as well, and I think even though the Lightning were swept in the first round last year, we've talked about this before, I still think they're the best team in the National Hockey League. That being said, Boston is a terrific team with terrific goaltending, and they're clutch. They're a little long in the tooth. Obviously, these are guys starting with Chara, and then you bring Marchand and Bergeron. But there's enough young guys there in the Carlos and the McAvoys and the Pasternak's that They're a very, very talented team, and they're exceptionally well coached. So the only problem with the Bruins is the division they're stuck in. You know, I think they're a division champion pretty much anywhere else you put them in the league. They just happen to be in the same division as the Tampa Bay Lightning, but Boston is an absolutely terrific, terrific hockey team. Forever TH says, after watching the Oilers last night, is it safe to say they easily won the Lucic-Neal deal? Also, we are going to see anyone approach 70 goals or more in a season anytime soon. If so, who's your guess? I think we're heading towards that. The offense just continues to get better and better in this league. So we've seen 60 recently. I think Ovechkin would be a candidate for sure. I think Kucherov would be a candidate for sure. We'll see what happens with the Kakkos and the Hughes in recent years moving forward. But yes, if I had to guess, I think that we are probably closer to a 70 goal scorer than we've ever been. And I think this sport right now is as close to what it was in the 80s as we've ever seen. We have completely removed ourselves from what we saw with the clutching and the grabbing and the left wing lock and the neutral zone traps that we saw in the 90s. That stuff is over. So whether you want to say the tweaking of the pads, the goaltending equipment, the elimination of the red line, all I know is that there's room on the ice and you are seeing some very, very talented players in this league. And yes, right now that deal, even though it's early, still very good for the Edmonton Oilers. Lucic just never seemed to fit in Edmonton. Neal is a similar type player. He's not a burner by any stretch of the imagination, but it just looks like at least right now seems to be a better fit. David Hines says, if you haven't heard, the Flyers are opening a rage room at tonight's game where the fans can reserve a slot time in a space and can destroy stuff like dishes and TVs with a bat sledgehammer. Can you see other teams eventually doing this or just a Philly thing? I think it's just a Philly thing, honestly. I think this is just filled with a bunch of pitfalls. I mean, the last thing you want to do is put a bunch of people in a room with glass and sledgehammers. This just looks like it's going to be a disaster. But coming from the city that actually had a judge on premises for people that got themselves in trouble, it's not surprising that this is the first time it's happening in Philadelphia. I don't think you'll see it anywhere else, and I don't think you're going to see it too many games past tonight in Philadelphia. I just think that's going to be a bit of a problem. Plus, how is it going to work? I mean, usually when people want to break things, that's a spontaneous thing, right? Like, usually if you have any time to think about it, if you're a normal human being, you're not going to want to do that. So for you to reserve the time, first of all, that means I guess not very optimistic about the team, but if I'm going to have to wait in line or wait my turn to do this, in the 30 minutes that it's going to take me to finally get into the rage room, am I still outraged about what happened? How many more goals were scored? Let's just say for sake of argument, the Devils score on hard. It's an awful goal. You're enraged about it. You go there. You book the time. You wait online to just destroy stuff. And then in that time, Philadelphia scores three unanswered goals and takes the lead. And by the time you get in the room, you're jumping up and down happy instead of upset. Or is this something that is only going to be for like after the game when they blow the lead or have an awful game? By that time, how tanked up are you? This just, it's like, I remember when I was younger, because I graduated high school in 86, so in the 80s, somebody had sent me a picture. I had forgotten all about it, that our shop teacher, the auto shop teacher at school, wheeled out like an old jalopy, gave us all a bunch of sledgehammers, and we went to town on the car. And thinking back on it, it was kind of fun, but I'm surprised somebody didn't bash their head in or break their arm or break a foot. It just seems like there's just so many more things that could go wrong than go right with situations like that. Unbelievable. Zach says, a weekend, what team player has been the biggest disappointment and which team player has been the biggest surprise? Well, you look at James Neal. I don't think anybody expected that kind of production. And as good as Mika Zibanejad is with the Rangers, I mean, for be the first player since 95 to score 8 points in the first two games, I don't think anybody had that written down. You look at teams, San Jose 0-4, Dallas 1-3. Those are some of the disappointments for sure as far as teams are concerned. It's way too early to start pigeonholing disappointments with players. I mean, anybody can have a bad couple of games. But certainly you got to be happy about what's happening in Carolina. I really thought that team would take a step back, but it looks like, the goaltending has been, really good for them, which I was kind of dubious about going in because you just didn't know. But Reimer was terrific last night going and beating his old team. A little disappointed in Florida here early on in the season. But again, it's so early. Again, the Devils were 4-0 last year, and they didn't even come close to making the playoffs. So the first week sometimes is a little suspect, but those are some of the things that I've looked at with a jaundiced eye here in officially the first week of the season as we got underway last Wednesday. Steven says, what's going on with the San Jose Sharks' poor start? Players not buying into Pete DeBoer's message anymore? Well, I'll tell you, I don't know if that's the case or not, but I will tell you that I think Pete DeBoer will not survive too much longer if this continues, because let's face it, they're a good team that went to the conference final. They've gone to a Stanley Cup final with DeBoer, but DeBoer's got a shelf life just like any other head coach. I can't imagine that just losing Pavelski would have you have this kind of start. Now, Burns has been hurt for sure, and they just got Evander Kane was suspended. So we'll keep an eye on it, but if you tell me come November, around Thanksgiving, this team's way out of it, and Pete DeBoer gets the hook? Yeah, I don't think I could be surprised at all by that. Matt Slim says, hey, Don, I know it's way too early in the season, but after last night's Caps game, do you see a regression coming out of Holpe this season? He just turned 30, and he has been going deep into the playoff runs each year. Not just that, but the number of games that he's played during the regular season, right? I mean, 30 is not some sort of mystical, magical number. We've seen goaltenders continue to be good, usually into like 32, 33, 35 seems to be that mystical, magical number where it kind of falls apart. But with the way this offense is right now and what's expected of goaltenders, considering, as you said, deep playoff runs, winning 49 games of the regular season, playing north of 60 games. I mean, I'd have to punch up his stats to see how often he's played recently, but actually it's not awful. When you consider the regular season, right? 73 games played in 14-15, 66 in 15-16, 63 in 16-17, but he played only 54 2 years ago, played 59 last year. Now, let's throw in, the postseason, then it gets a little bit different, right? Because you win the Stanley Cup and all the games that he played, although he didn't start the first two games of the playoffs, if you remember, when they won the Stanley Cup. But not something to keep an eye on, I guess, but not nearly as many games as I thought at first blush, but certainly probably something to consider at some point. Let's see. Mark says, are there any legal reasons for the start of the schedule for Rangers? By the time they play their fourth game, Pens Caps will have played 8. Makes no sense. All right. I have talked to everybody I could have talked to within the league and around the Rangers, and no one has a clue why they've got a full week off. No one. And they play Saturday, first time in a week, and then they're not going to play until the following Thursday. So it's just incredible. The coach is red hot about it. David Quinn can't take it because you know what? You want to get in a flow. You want some consistency. You don't want to have too many games, but you don't want to be sitting around either. It's like they almost had another mini training camp. This is not a bye, by the way. The byes come in January. This is just a fluke, a loophole in the schedule, okay? But here's the good news. They got tons of games in hand, okay? So that's a good thing if you're going to win those games. And, you know, that allowed them to make the trade for Nemestikov. It allowed them to be a little bit more patient with some of the younger guys that almost made the team in training camp. So I'm sure the Rangers can spin this into a positive, although right now nobody seems to be happy about it and nobody has an answer. Chris says, hi, Don. I understand we're only a week into the season. However, with the Penguins at 1-2, Malkin out 6 to 10 weeks, and an aging roster, is this a team that could be in trouble? Last night was a little disturbing to me because they still have Sidney Crosby. They still have Letang. They still have a lot of good offensive players, and you've got a Winnipeg Jet team that's on fumes, right? They start in the East Coast. They play the Rangers. They play the Devils. They play the Islanders. They're getting towards the end of this trip. Their blue line, you know, they've lost the top four guys on their blue line, and yet the Penguins could only muster one goal. So maybe it is. I mean, there was, even before the Malkin injury and the Bukestad injury, there was feelings that the Penguins could take a step back, how easily it went out of the playoffs last year. It could happen. It's going to eventually happen, right? So maybe with a slow start, but, you know, you get Malkin healthy, you get Crosby healthy. Remember, he wasn't 100% to start the season. It's not exactly a team I'd bet against, but... Stranger things have happened, right? It can't go on forever. Paul says, hey, Don, what is your favorite away arena to call a game? Well, there's a few of them, but it is very tough to beat Montreal. First of all, Montreal is a tremendous city. Second of all, everything is close to the arena, the hotel, all the great restaurants, so you don't have to even get in a cab. That's how great Montreal is. Then the airport's not that crazy far away. Three, it is the most energized building in the league. I mean, they're singing. It's like a soccer game there. 21,000 people just going nuts for every play. And fourth is that it's the best sight lines for my announcing. I mean, they've got a gondola that hangs over the ice so you can kind of lean over and be right on top of the play. It's the best arena. There's other great arenas. I love Chicago. The atmosphere in there is crazy with the anthem and the building's big, and you're kind of far away as far as calling the game is concerned, but a great city, Original Six, is terrific. I love Calgary. Calgary's got the gondola you hang over the ice there. The atmosphere there is tremendous. Those are the two, the three that kind of pop into my head that make it a lot of fun to call games. It's so much fun to do. I'm so honored to do it and looking forward to the game coming up on Saturday. Calling the Oiler game at Madison Square Garden. Edmonton used to be one of the best places too at Rexall Place, but they moved into Rogers Place, and now it's such a big arena. You're far away from the ice, so it doesn't have the same feel that it did back in the day. All right, three games tonight, but all of them pretty significant. I mean, I really will enjoy watching this Buffalo Sabre team, and this Canadiens team has played only a couple of games, but their first win was spectacular on Saturday, the back and forth against the Leafs, so I'm looking forward to that game at 7 o'clock tonight. At 7:30 on national television, NBC Sportsnet, Devils and the Flyers. Flyers have only played the one game out in the Czech Republic. I don't understand why these teams, or this league, I should say, sends a team to the Czech Republic to play just one game. They should have played a home-and-home against the Blackhawks and be done with it. But for the Flyers to be sitting on one game for that long a period of time seems crazy. And the Devils have played two disastrous games, getting killed in Buffalo, blowing that 4-0 lead against Winnipeg. So I'm interested to see that one. And at 10 o'clock, the Kings and the Canucks. Canucks, unlike last year, off to a slow start at 0-2. Kings, second of back-to-back, so... probably looking at the Canucks for a victory this year. Not sure I'm strong enough to feel with the ice pick, considering I lost three of my first four ice picks. I had a huge parlay to start, and then I kind of get into a slump here, so makes me a little bit nervous. But those are the games coming up tonight. So we'll do another one tomorrow, kind of get you set for the three games played. And then Thursday has got a bunch of games that are going to highlight the day. You look at the Maple Leafs Lightning. That's a game you got to sink your teeth into and preview. Other games that'll be fun, Devils and the Oilers. That's fun because you've got McDavid and then maybe the next generation and Hughes playing against each other. So a lot of interesting game. Caps Predators as the Predators continue this homestand to start the season. So we'll talk all about that tomorrow. So thanks for the tweets. Always great to get in touch with the fans and the fans of hockey. At Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct's the way to do that. Talk to you again tomorrow. This has been the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct Podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.